You're now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
Well, GM, everyone, here with some special guests, Yathik, the founder of DGen, Will and Ian, co-founders of Syndicate. This is actually me coming out of podcast retirement for this very special episode that's, you know, top of mind. You know, I know Tom has some disclosures in the beginning, but since this is my first podcast in a while, some disclosures. One, Delphi is our investors in Syndicate. And then two, I have DGen packs. So that should hopefully get that out of the way. And nothing's financial, tax, or anything advice like that. So yeah, basically the way this conversation is going to go, like two main parts that I want to highlight are one, you know, obviously DGen, everything that's going on in that community, what and why the L3, and then really dive into, you know, Syndicate's role in that, as well as like, you know, just L3s in general. First part, I really want to dive, you know, go with Yathik and dive into DGen, but before we even get into that, like maybe Will and Ian, you can kind of like help like set some context for the pod, like what are L3s? Like, why should people care about them? You know, why should we, you know, why should the listeners even listen to this whole episode?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead.
So in my opinion, L3s are one of the most exciting innovations in crypto in the past 6 to 12 months. The reason why is because they offer unlimited customizations with near zero gas fees. That is pretty phenomenal in what's possible. You can start to customize these chains in specific ways. Like DGen, very early on, one of the first things we talked about was let's make sure that we can do forecaster signature verification and like other forecaster data on chain. And then at near zero gas fees, transactions on DGen are between a millionth and a billionth of a penny, depending on gas fees. So you start to get this kind of limitless creativity in terms of how you can customize the chain and how you can use the chain. L3s allow for this because bridging is very cheap. They're an L3 because they bridge in and out of base in the case of DGen chain. And then also the data for the L3 is very cheap. So as a result, you just have incredible low cost, high volume experimentation.
Yeah, and something that I would just add is like the combination of these technical innovations that have like come online in the last few months, right, with the modularization of blockchains and things like alternative data availability layers like Celestia and whatnot, like it really unlocks this customization that ultimately leads to new business model innovations at the L3 level. So what that means, I think, is that these applications, these ecosystems, these communities like DGen and others have a lot more agency and are empowered in ways to actually design their economy and their economic model in ways that they didn't have if they were on an L2 or certainly on an L1. So I think that that's one of the coolest things is that, and reasons, frankly, why we think L3s is going to be a big thing is because communities want that economic agency to accomplish whatever short-term, medium-term, long-term goals that they have with their ecosystem.
Yeah, makes sense. I think this is a great like segue into like, you know, what DGen is and why this community kind of like went down the L3 path, right? So maybe some context before I like switch it over to Yathik, but you know, DGen launched in January 2024. And I remember seeing it because it was like, you know, the main utility it started off as was with like, you know, this tipping functionality on Forecaster. You know, everyone's daily allowance was based on their recent, you know, interactions with cats. And it kind of, you know, what I found really interesting about it was it had like virality and distribution kind of built in on the base layer, right? Since it was as easy as like commenting on someone's cats with an X amount of DGen, you want to tip them. Maybe Yathik, like before we even get into L3, like where did this idea for DGen come from? And then like, yeah, it seemed to evolve pretty quickly. Like how was that kind of journey?
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. And I guess, so like the genesis was in the DGen channel on Forecaster. And I had been hanging out in the Forecaster channel or in the DGen channel like prior to that. I actually joined Forecaster in July. So I don't know, like I talked to Ted, which is like, she's like a big OG. And I was like, I don't know if I'm an OG. She's like, yeah, you're definitely an OG. So maybe I'm part of that crowd. But during those times, I guess the DGen channel wasn't really happening. Like this was not like a place where... I would say the Forecaster crowd, which was made of mostly like Web3 builders and like kind of like serious personalities in the space, wanted to kind of associate with. But then in December, something changed. And I don't know exactly what, but people started building these tokens. And Points was the first one. And then there was like WowWow. And there was the whole bunch. And so I kind of caught wind of this. And I had quit my job in November. and I kind of wanted to start my own startup, and I was looking for ideas and things that were kind of hot. And so I kind of jumped on this, just kind of thinking like, you know, this is like really cool. And I started with a post or with a cast, and that cast was basically just a promise. Like, you know, I want to build a token and it's going to be fairly distributed. I don't know exactly what I put in there, but I got a ton of likes. And so then I decided like, okay, I'm going to drop everything I'm doing and I'm just going to work on this for the next 2 weeks, like just like crazy. So basically working day and night for 2 weeks, like, and figuring out like tokenomics, figuring out like, you know, how to write this token properly, kind of copying things from Uniswap and Blur and things like that. And then finally kind of putting it out there. And all the while, people were kind of earning points, I think, or I don't remember exactly. Yeah, they were earning points basically on our leaderboard on degen.tips. And they were earning it based on their likes, reactions. We also had like NFT boosts. So this all comes from the points meta that kind of Blur pioneered, basically boosting and things like that. So a lot was kind of taken from that whole idea. But also the whole idea of points, it's kind of like Reddit karma in a way, which Farcaster didn't really have. And like one of my ideas prior to the token was going to be channels.fun, which is going to be a mixture of friend tech and Reddit or like subreddits, bonding curves, things like that. So I was definitely interested in points and karma and kind of like these kind of ranking systems and things like that. So that was kind of like the whole idea behind that. January 6th, the token contract was deployed. January 8th, the airdrop went live. January 7th, the liquidity pool actually went live, like prior, like a few hours prior to the actual launch. And so like a lot of bots ended up buying a ton of the token and they became whales, but is what it is. That's kind of how it happens. And then, so I guess that was the first phase. Second phase was airdrop 2. And that was, you know, I was kind of searching for ideas. I talked to a friend of mine who's been in the space for a while and is much more seasoned than I am. And I had a list of ideas. We went through them. And, you know, one of the ideas was basically tipping. And that was the last idea on the list. And he basically stopped me and was like, whoa, you know, like, you know, what is this tipping idea? And, you know, that surprised me because it was lower on my list. I didn't think it was going to be that cool. We went through, you know, that would basically take me probably a few hours to probably 4 or 5 hours or something to put this together. It's not all that complicated. And so he's like, well, if it's very low effort and maximum impact, then just do that. And so that's what I ended up doing. And then I think the reaction was kind of like a whoa moment where like I definitely received some DMs from people who were just like this is kind of like insane in a way. Like they kind of blew their minds. Less so for me, I think. I wasn't like so blown away by this because I always kind of felt like, oh man, I need to build like this like SpaceX style like application, something that's going to have like all these different features and things. But it seemed like the small kind of moves, but impactful moves are like, you know, they leave an imprint. And so yeah, but that, you know, that in its entirety, I think was also taken in part from, like, I used to be on 4chan. I remember they were giving out like, I don't remember what it was, like not Dogecoin, but maybe like Litecoin or things like that. You had to like download the wallets and all that kind of stuff. And they were like, paste your address and they'd give it to you. And like I deleted all those wallets and all those things. I formatted my computer, so I don't have any of that stuff. But I remember that like that was the mechanism. And then on Reddit, there was a Dogecoin bot, which was really popular. And then it ended up rugging. The founder or the person took all the coins. But that was like super popular. It had a whole bunch of different commands, a whole bunch of different things. And it was cool. Like people were using it for a long time. And then there was the idea of Dogecoin potentially doing something on Twitter, like Elon Musk, all that kind of hype that happened. And people were really kind of rooting for Dogecoin finally being this like official tipping mechanism. And it never really happened. So I do think tipping has been ingrained in this whole crypto scene from the beginning, like almost as like a distribution mechanism. So it felt, but like I wasn't intentional about it. Like that I kind of started, I think about that now, like today, but when I was doing tipping, I didn't think about that almost at all. So it was almost like, yeah, let's just do tipping. It seems like a cool idea and it's low efforts, but it adds a lot of value. And the way we did it was that there's a tipping allocation which you get. And so you don't have to tip out of your own wallet, which was like, that's, I think that's the cool part. And that's actually, yeah. Oh yeah, so that was kind of taken from a little bit. So like a lot of these things are obviously ideas that kind of get filtered through and kind of get glued together in a way. And so like that for sure was like heavily influenced by Frentech. And I'm actually really excited because I think I'm going to be able to, I think we're organizing a little meeting with Racer. Somebody's like in between us. And I think we'll be able to talk and I don't know what's going to come out of that. But like this guy for me is just like a really innovative in like the points, incentives, kind of space, and like the whole thing he did with Frentech was like really cool. And like there was one feature where they had this sliding bar, and you could post kind of like you could post on Twitter almost, and they removed this since then, but you could basically, you would get this allocation of points which were not tied to the actual Frentech points, and you could move this slider across and give a post some amount of points. And I thought that was like genius, and then they took it out. And they were just magical internet points. And so I think the whole idea was kind of like, let's take these magical internet points, give them some value, and like let people actually earn something from them, kind of like people earn on YouTube. And I think that's the new narrative that's kind of shaping up. There's like the L2 narrative, which is kind of happening in this cycle that at least I've seen, and I'm not super deep into like the whole, up to date with what's happening in terms of like new trends and things like that. But I think SocialFi is one of those kind of like narratives. Another one seems to be like the whole L2 wars. And then like now there's this L3 thing that's happening, which is like super new, it seems. So,
yeah. No, I think like the way that, you know, at least, you know, before last week, the way that I thought about DGEN and its role was like it has utility within the forecaster ecosystem. Is also great beta for Forecaster, right? I know those guys just raised, you know, at a $1 billion valuation. Seems like Dan has no intentions of doing a token soon. So it seemed like DGEN was a great way to get kind of data on that. As well as like 2 weeks ago, you saw, you know, Dracula, that like TikTok of crypto app, kind of like partner and integrate you guys as well. So my thesis for, you know, owning DGEN was just like, hey, more of the, you know, one, it's like, has really cool distribution reality built into it. But then two, more at, like I'm bullish on Forecaster and its growth. I think more apps will launch. So I just expected more and more apps to kind of like, you know, launch and kind of integrate DGEN. And then, you know, out of nowhere, you know, last week, you guys not only announced, but launched the L3, which I also thought was really cool. Not only did you announce it and say this was coming later, it was like, not here it is, right? So I'd love to like, you know, learn a little bit more about how that came about, why you thought DGEN, you know, needed an L3, you know, maybe just for your context for people, like that was really interesting how it was built too. Obviously the syndicate guys had like a huge role to play here, and we can get into that as well. But, you know, it's built using Arbitrum's Orbit framework with settlement on Base, right? Which is, you know, another like layer two off of like, you know, using Optimism stack. And then the native token of DGEN chain is obviously DGEN. But yeah, would love to learn more about like, where did, you know, you go from like tipping and that meta to like, okay, now we need this L3 and to like have our own kind of like world.
Yeah, so I'll definitely leave the kind of like the technical aspect to basically the syndicate team, because they I mean they were like totally hands-on. I didn't really have any hands-on in terms of like coding or like piecing things together. So I definitely want to give that to them, because like, I mean, it's been insane. Like the how fast we kind of like made this thing happen. And also just our kind of like initial conversation. I mean, I know we kind of talked about this before the call, but definitely want to mention it, that like we had our initial conversation while basically Will and Ian were at ETH Denver. And yeah, and I think, I don't know, things just really clicked for me. Like it felt like Syndicate was the right person to basically, or the right entity basically to do this. Because everywhere else I was kind of looking was more, if you want to do like roll up as a service, basically there's other companies that will do that for you, but they're more of like the AWS's of the world, where like, yeah, you know, we have it, but like you have to do a lot of different things yourself. Whereas I don't really have that much time right now to like tinker around, and like I don't have the expertise right now, and I'm not really like hiring a blockchain expert or anything like that. So definitely Will and Ian had all the expertise, and they were super just excited to build on DGEN, which was like the main factor for me, was just like, you know, these guys are on board, so it made sense. But going back to like the initial question was, you know, how did like we even arrive at this point? It was mostly basically two developers that came to me. They were building Powerball, which was a big frame on Farcaster, a big degen frame. Basically, you claim a ticket, you play this lottery. It's all on chain. They have like this randomness technology that they've been moving from one chain to another chain for like, I think, a few years now. And they haven't been able to find a good home for it. And but this frame really is like the UI for the randomness stuff that they're doing on chain, which is like the main piece, I guess. And so they were really pushing me towards this like whole layer three idea of like, you know, we're spending $300 a day on gas on base. It's kind of expensive. So I was kind of trying to convince them to go off chain, like do things like DGen is doing, like do it all, you know, calculate off chain. But like their whole like model is that they're doing everything, you know, they want the randomness technology to be on chain. So, it was kind of like, it wasn't really an option. So after they kind of pushed me really, really in this direction, I started realizing, yeah, this is cool. Like having our own chain, having our own ecosystem, maybe even having our own like app store. In a way that would be like super powerful. And I started going in this kind of like land, like this idea of basically like the way it's kind of been framed in my mind. And I've kind of been like telling people this is like, it's almost like the Las Vegas of blockchains, where like basically you might go to Vegas with like $500 or something. And you know, that $500 is just for you to kind of like spend at the casino, maybe go get something to eat or whatever. If you lose it, like whatever happens, it's fine. But maybe you come back with full bags back home. And so, it's not supposed to just be about gambling. It's mostly about just like you're taking money to this place and you're having fun there and you're spending that on like a fun experience. And then like, if you don't come back with the money, that's fine, because like you got your money's worth. And so I kind of think of like Dogecoin, if they had their own chain that was EVM, I mean, they do have their own layer one, but if they had their own chain that was like EVM compatible, and like you could, I don't actually know the technical details. I know that Vitalik is on the foundation there and things like that. So I was really bullish that they're gonna start building this out. Especially once Elon Musk started like pumping it and stuff, but they ended up not really doing too much. And it feels like now we have this opportunity to kind of do something in the space where people can build fun apps where not necessarily they might not find a good home on Base or on Optimism or on Arbitrum or even on Blast, where people are kind of building these more like serious kind of like big, like, I don't know, these big tech companies almost, like they have like these huge, like really big visions. And also I don't want to discount people who are on DGen chain. So like you shouldn't have a big vision, but I think it's much more like of a place where you can find a home, you can find a community. You can also find a token like the DGen token, which is like, it's not that easy to, it's easy to launch a token technically, but like develop a community around it, like legal aspects, getting your token like to be listed on exchanges, like all that kind of stuff. It's not that easy. So if you want to like bootstrap a project, maybe just use the DGen token like initially, and then start figuring out like maybe you have like maybe Dracula will have their own token, maybe somebody else will have their own token. But DGen helped with that. And so I think that will be ingrained in the app. And I hope that, you know, they do continue to support that. That's kind of like,
yeah, it's really interesting the way that you paint that, like the Las Vegas of blockchains, with all these kind of like mini like roulette type, you know, casino like apps, which I think is pretty cool. Because again, like if you guys talk to Ian and Will, you know, during the Denver, that means that you guys went from like idea to like creation and launch like in what, like a month, right? And I think like also the timing was really somehow you guys like nailed the timing too. Because you know, I think ETH Denver, obviously meme coins were not, you know, we're definitely like in the, you know, echo chamber for sure too, but like post ETH Denver, they kind of took over the meta, right? And so like DGen's kind of like place in that world kind of like really helped out and played a bigger role. But like, you know, now in less than a week, like you guys have, you know, at least these are the latest stats we're recording on like Wednesday, April 3rd, less than a week, 13 million transactions, 700,000 plus wallets have bridged to DGen, and $60 million plus has been bridged, which is kind of like insane to think about. Will and Ian, I'd love to hear from you guys as far as like how you guys thought, like, and also like whose idea was this like L3, right? Like, I know you guys have, and maybe we can kind of take a step back, because like you guys have a really interesting story too. I've been like big supporters, think you guys are probably some of the most powerful builders that I've ever had like pleasure working with. You guys started building Syndicate years ago, and it was more so kind of like very parallel to what, you know, Kobe just launched recently with Echo, right? Where people can kind of like launch groups to invest in projects and, you know, kind of like invest their funds together. You guys kind of pivoted, and I don't know if you guys remember that conversation, but I was like, I kind of like the idea you guys are currently building, but whatever you guys want to build up, I'll support. And you guys like pivoted to this, and now this is like one of your first really big, I know you guys have done a lot of other stuff in stealth that I don't know if you can even talk about, but this is one of the biggest public launches, right? Would love to like learn a little bit more about that story, and then we can kind of talk about how this DGen kind of conversation happened too.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would say is actually we wanted to launch DGen Chain even faster than we did. So, you know, for us, we were like, man, this is taking a long time. I mean, I do think like this is the first Arbitrum Orbit L3 with a custom gas token, which is pretty amazing, and especially at this scale. So there were a lot of like intricacies involved in that. You know, as Jacek mentioned, there was the rollup, but there was also kind of, you know, the supporting infrastructure, you know, required to actually make it usable for users and developers like the bridge and Block Explorer and a number of other things. So there was quite a bit of work there, even though we would have loved to launch, you know, the week after we had talked with Jacek at ETH Denver or during ETH Denver. I mean, I remember Will and I we got off that call and we were just, I mean, even during the call, frankly, we were DMing each other, just talking about how excited we were to work with Jacek. It doesn't take long, you know, to have a conversation with Jacek and realize that he's just really thoughtful and cutting edge about what he wants to do. And those are the types of teams that we want to work with and have worked with in the past. I think your question, Anil, is a really, really interesting one. I mean, frankly, that one that Will and I have been sort of reflecting on, you know, especially over the last couple months about like how we've started to get into this and how it connects to sort of the original mission and vision of Syndicate. You know, when we started Syndicate in 2021, it was really about sort of DAOs as infrastructure to enable communities on chain to do things that and empower them in ways that they never could, you know, before, right? And we always had this vision long term that Syndicate would sort of decentralize into this network technology and, you know, support a wide range of applications for these on-chain communities, you know, from social to gaming to, you know, creators and whatnot. But we thought that at least at that time, now this is a very different era back in 2021, that the right application to start with was actually co-investing. And, you know, I think we timed that pretty well. We were involved in a lot of, you know, the kind of, you know, very visible, I guess, initiatives and projects kind of that era. And we still believe in it. And what Kobe is doing and what a handful of others are you know, doing, I think is really awesome, actually. And it's cool to see them sort of go after, I think, what is a really big opportunity and a really big problem that continues to exist. I think my reflections on this are that the market was a little early. I think it's still there, though, and it's still really big. But I think one of the things that I came to realize or we came to realize was that, you know, more fundamentally, we were and continue to try to find out how to build the best infrastructure for communities on chain to empower them in the ways that they want and need to kind of grow and succeed, right? In a crypto native, on-chain native way. And I think initially our approach was at the smart contract layer. And then that led us actually to sort of APIs to easily interact with those smart contracts. But I think ultimately what we're starting to find is that chains themselves, whether you want to call them an L2, an L3 or whatever, but effectively chains themselves or rollups themselves might end up being the best infrastructure for on-chain communities to do everything that they want and grow. So I think that that's one of the ways that we think about L3s is that, you know, it is potentially the best technology for these on-chain communities to do incredible things that they never could if they were only at the smart contract or only at the application layer, you know, on basically some of these public chains.
Yeah, I really like the way that you framed that, because I think when we first had that discussion, I thought you guys were pivoting very hard, right? But then what I came to understand, what you guys helped me understand, was like the mission and vision is stay the same. It's just how you kind of achieve that and help enable these communities to kind of like, you know, achieve the best versions of themselves. What was kind of like the thing that you were actually, you know, iterating on. Yeah, so I would love to kind of dive more into, you know, layer threes, like, what, you know, why they need to exist. You know, I know you kind of like gave some, you know, context early in the call, but like, you know, why was this needed? Why did you see this needed for DGEN from your guys' side? And then how did you make this happen? Like, what were like the hard parts? You know, do you think this is needed for most communities? Which communities should be considering L3s, or which type of applications do you think work best using L3s?
Yeah, so I think that a good heuristic for candidates for L3s is, does what you're doing benefit from ultra low gas fees and an incredibly high degree of customizability? For NFTs, gaming, social, and like some of these more experimental apps, the answer is absolutely, they'll benefit from L3s. If you're doing like real world assets or things with really high dollar amounts, like low volumes of transactions, probably not as relevant. But I think that there's a really large swath of the industry that would benefit a ton from L3s. We're still early in the L3 space. DGEN is one of the earliest L3s. I think that what we'll start to see over time as it evolves is, right now, all of these chains are using generalized roll-up infrastructure. They're using Arbitrum Orbit, they're using the OP stack, and there's customizations that will happen down the road, but very little customizability up front. It's kind of like out of the box, pretty similar up front. But I think that that will change as the customization frameworks get more and more developed. So in our very first call with Jacek, we were talking about precompiles. With precompiles, you can basically insert custom code into a rollup that can do anything that would be impossible inside of a smart contract. So we're like, hey, what can we do with Farcaster data and Farcaster signatures using precompiles? Like, what can we do with some of these on-chain social use cases? Like, how can you start to bring this in? And it becomes really, really compelling when you start to customize the chain. I think right now, L3s, like, the gas fees are a very immediately visible benefit. But over time, I think the customizability will become the primary reason that people go for them.
I'm also kind of thinking about that a little bit more, because like things kind of sink in the more I hear about them and the more like we're along on this journey. And like, obviously, not being kind of hands-on in the whole process of actually like building the chain and having Syndicate do it, they know a lot more. But now that I'm kind of like in it and kind of like figuring it out and also kind of like experiencing it, it does seem interesting, this whole idea of customization, which I think I've discounted a little bit before in our previous talks, where we've kind of like, you know, been thinking about this. And I think there's maybe a lot of potential in this, where you do have like this like NPM, if you write JavaScript, or you have like these node packages, or like any basically language that has like object-oriented code, where you can basically pull different objects, you know, basically into your code without like effortlessly. And so I think it would be interesting if Arbitrum or like one of these kind of like, you know, blockchain providers or blockchain solutions added that, you know, added some kind of store, added some kind of like library package manager kind of place. And I don't know how difficult that is or like how crazy of an idea that is. But like, if you could do like, you could basically pull from these different areas and customize your layer three. And maybe that's a place for the startup space to maybe Syndicate. I don't know. Like, I don't know who the right people are to kind of like work in that area, but maybe that could be a cool place. Like, for instance, Blast, they totally like reworked their whole L2 chain. And basically, I think it's based on Optimism. They added basically yield as like kind of like a native primitive over there. What if like, Optimism or Arbitrum or somebody just had like a code base, you pull that in and like now you have that feature. You could maybe turn off features on and off. Maybe Farcaster has some kind of features, or maybe people build those features in and you can kind of pull from those repositories and deploy them. So I think maybe there is a future, and like, obviously I'm very new to like all of this as well, but like listening to all of this, it seems like the customization is probably more powerful than I first kind of envisioned. It's just that I don't think I want to be doing the customization myself. I would rather pull the customizations from startups who are focusing on that and innovating in that space. Because I don't think DGEN should be innovating in the space of customizing blockchains. But I think customizing blockchains is powerful. And if we could pull from those kind of places, and right now that's what Syndicate has been doing a lot, is helping with the customizations and all that kind of stuff, which I don't really want to deal with on that level. So that's big.
Yeah. That's cool that you say that. Like, I, before this pod, I actually went back and read, you know, Vitalik's like write up about layer threes, and I was kind of like surprised to realize that was, you know, done almost 2 years ago at this point. And he had like three main visions that he pointed out for L3s that he thought could be useful. One was like L2s are for scaling, L3s are for customized functionality, which is exactly what you're hitting on right now. Yes, and I think the example he used in that was like privacy, because he was more so focused on Starknet. Two was like L2s are for general purpose scaling, L3s are for customized scaling. So they're, again, like the customized word, right? And then three was like L2s are for trustless scaling and like rollups, and L3 is for like weekly trusted scaling, right? And I think for that one, he was also thinking like Validium's, like, again, like akin to like what Starknet's doing. Now, like the way that, one other question I had was like, are all L3s like individual, or, you know, can they interoperate? Can they be composable? Like, is that going to take time for other L3s to launch? Because I know, you know, DGEN's one of the first ones, but I'm curious how you guys think about that. Is that going to be a lot of hard work?
Yes, there's a number of different composability visions in the space. And the composability sits at different layers. So you have like this like composability at the rollup framework level. So you look at Optimism Superchain, where every OP stack chain, Base, Optimism, others can interact and can compose. That requires everyone to be on the OP stack, which works really well in some cases, works less well in others. I think it's one compelling vision of scaling interoperability. There's another vision of interoperability, which is like the shared sequencer vision, where you take a shared sequencer like Espresso, and the shared sequencer is how everyone composes and communicates, which requires everyone to bind to the same shared sequencer ecosystem, but is also very interesting tech. We think about the scaling and composability in different ways, actually. In our opinion, the majority of the composability needs are not actually assets, it's mostly data. So oftentimes what you don't need is like atomic composability of assets, except for in a limited set of use cases like real world assets, where you might want to seamlessly like bridge whatever 10K over, have it operate to it, then have 10K back. What most of the time, what you need is composability of data. Like, we want to know how many Farcaster followers you have on the DGEN chain so that apps can start to take that into account. Maybe if DGEN chain is interoperating with the game, your DGEN balance can be known on that chain. So we've already done a bunch of stuff that helps here, like Farcaster signature verification, but we're also working on a bunch of data oracles that'll make it really easy for the data of these chains to interoperate. I think that interoperability of assets is a vision that most people in the space are pursuing. We have a bit of a different view from what we've seen with customers. And I think that interoperability of data, it's not the narrative yet. I think it will be the narrative soon. And that's probably where things will go.
Something just to build on that, like, Anil, you were asking earlier, like, who needs an L3? I think it's really, really interesting along the lines of what Will was just saying, and also kind of related to the low gas fees. You know, when we first launched our first L3, which was Farcaster Frame Developers. I want to say, Will, it was like 2 months ago. It feels like ages ago. But that was our first, and DGEN is our third, and there's a whole bunch of others that we're working on. But, you know, when we launched it, we didn't really know what was going to happen. We were just like, you know, the fees on these L2s, like Base and others, it's not, you know, sustainable for mainstream consumer applications. In terms of cost. So we launched it and we started running it and we were like, this has to be wrong. Like, a single transaction is 1/100,000,000th of a penny. Like, how is that possible? And it wasn't wrong. So, you know, if you look at DGEN, right, some of the transactions are like 1/1,000,000,000th of a penny, which I don't even know how many is there. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? So what does that mean? Like, when you have near zero gas fees on these L3s, like, you know, application developers or games or whatever, they don't have to now sort of do this mental calculus of like what should be on chain versus off chain, or how much should be on chain versus off chain. They can start to like basically by default put more of it on chain. Things can go on chain that previously weren't on chain, right? And I think what becomes really exciting is that when you have more data on chain, whether from applications natively on these L3s or, as Will was sort of saying, via oracles, right, coming from different places, whether different chains or off chain even, I think what we're going to start to see is that you build more like rich on-chain applications in the areas of like social, consumer, gaming, et cetera, right? And like that means it's going to unlock kind of new experiences that we haven't seen in the Web3 space to date. So like one analogy that I sometimes use is like, I remember when the iPhone first came out and like, I was kind of, you know, pretty skeptical about it, to be honest. I was like, oh, that's just a smaller computer, which is true. But like the fact that it was, you know, it dramatically shifted kind of what could be developed on it. Then mobile applications, you know, really started coming out, and then Uber and all these other things, right? And I think you can kind of look at L3s in the same way. It's like, oh, it's just a cheaper, you know, a cheaper chain, which is true. But I think what we'll start to see in the probably months and years ahead is that actually, no, you can build much more rich and new applications as a result of that. So we're just sort of at the beginning of that, but I'm really excited about sort of what we're going to see in the months and years ahead here.
And yeah, I can't wait for people to be triggered when we name this episode L3's the iPhone moment for crypto. Thanks for that, Ian. But I think like one question, you know, another maybe technical question that I had was like, how does the sequencer work for the L3? Like, is there like need for validators in the future? Like, is there going to be, are you going to need a stake degen? Like, how should we be thinking about that?
Yeah. So I'll talk about how sequencers work. I'm not going to talk about anything related to staking, anything like that. That's all in six core. Essentially, so right now, all L2s and L3s, the sequencer it's known as a single sequencer. So it is all transactions flow through one sequencer, and it is essentially centralized. L2s and L3s, that's equivalent. That's true for Optimism, Base, Arbitrum, Degen, all the same. What you can start to do over time is you can start to decentralize the sequencer. And there's a bunch of different visions for how to decentralize the sequencer. One of my favorite visions for sequencer decentralization is called based sequencing. So essentially, it's where there is no centralized sequencer in any way, and every single person who wants to be a sequencer can write directly to the chain. And as long as their transactions are valid, which is what nodes take care of, they take care of making sure the transactions are valid, then the transaction can occur. This gets really, really exciting because you can basically flip from centralized to decentralized like that. It's wild what's possible. You need fraud proofs, you need fault proofs, which again, like the layer twos and layer threes are working on and they're equivalent from that perspective in terms of their current level of development. But I'm really excited for the world where these chains start to decentralize, because then layer threes are really, really compelling. It's like, hey, this layer three is an open ecosystem. Anyone can participate. Anyone can start to get transactions on chain. And you start to have this, this very, very collaborative ecosystem. That's actually uniquely possible with layer threes because base sequencing can be so cheap compared to, for example, layer twos, where base sequencing can be more expensive and the cost of failed transactions is higher. So I think layer threes, okay, this is a very controversial statement, but I think it may be easier for layer threes to decentralize their sequencer than layer twos under some different forms of sequencer decentralization.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then, you know, how should we think about the criticism that if all L3s settled to one L2, then like Ethereum would capture basically no value? And I know you probably saw some of this criticism like last week when L3s were like the talk of the town. Like, and you know, then the next step there is like, thus like Ethereum security would be at risk, right? Like, is there any truth to this? How do you think about that? Curious what you guys think.
Yeah, so it's important to talk about what gets written to the chain. So there's two types of ways that Ethereum is used for, say, a layer two. It's used for data availability, and it's also used for settlement. Data availability is when you're publishing transactions from layer two to the layer one, in this case using Ethereum EIP 4844 expiring blobs. The first blobs actually just expired a couple days ago, or where you're bridging in and out. I'd say that the move to cheaper data availability opens up things that are not possible with even 4844 blobs, because you go from 1 cent to 10 cents per transaction to a billionth of a penny to a millionth of a penny per transaction. So you'll start to see more and more modular data availability solutions used, like Celestia, for example, like Arbitrum AnyTrust DA. You'll start to see more of that in use. And then there's the settlement of the funds, which is which chain you're bridging in and out of. In the case of DGEN, that's Base. In the case of say Base, that's Ethereum. The DGEN token is already on Base. That's where all the users are. That's where the token is. So if you want to bridge in and out, you're going to go where the token is. I think that all the arguments of like Ethereum not capturing value are misguided, because essentially what is important is adoption of Ethereum. We want more and more people to be using the EVM, to be using smart contracts, to be using Ethereum, where it eventually settles down to some layer, whether it's a layer three or layer two to layer one, it ends up settling to Ethereum at some point. And to say like, oh, well, Ethereum should capture value for like 1 cent to 10 cent transactions to data availability and miss out on the millions and millions of users, even billions of users who will be onboarded at a billionth of a penny to millionth of a penny gas fees. It's kind of missing the forest for the trees. It's like, oh, well, what we care about is our bags, not usage. And I say this as like someone who like is very pro Ethereum and very pro the Ethereum. I'm an EVM maxi, not an Ethereum maxi, but like I say this as someone where like the majority of my bags are Ethereum and the Ether token. Like to say like, oh, like what matters is value capture. It's like, no, I thought what we cared about was usage, right? That's what we're all here for. And that's what layer three is enable.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the main point of that criticism, though, that kind of like caught my eye was more so the security talk, right? I think the value capture is definitely like, yeah, like I think you definitely make a good argument for why the value capture and the security is the main thing that people are going to be thinking about. But yeah, I think like overall, like, you know, having if DGEN chain brings in, you know, tens of thousands, millions of users, that net is positive for Ethereum.
Yeah, regardless. I mean, from the security standpoint, like, L2s and L3s, they're both centralized sequencers right now. They both have one sequencer where everything's flowing through. Like L2s and L3s still have either non-working or permissioned fraud proofs and fault proofs. You can't permissionlessly submit any of this. And L2s and L3s, the sequencer can still censor, the sequencer can still deny transactions. And in both cases, you can still go around the sequencer and do a direct write to the underlying chain. So, I mean, like, I think, how shall I put it? There are obvious ways where L3s start to be very decentralized and very secure with things like base sequencing, which is easier on an L3 than an L2. And in the meantime, the L2s and the L3s are equivalent in terms of their level of decentralization. Like the censorship resistance of having 4844 blobs is valuable, to be clear. But the biggest censorship risk is not nodes censoring blobs. It's the sequencer, the centralized sequencer that we have right now. And I think like on some practical metrics, like when there is base sequencing, I think L3s will be, again, controversial, more decentralized than the layer twos. I think that it will take some time, you know, when you look at most of these security properties and they're almost entirely equivalent, except for like small nits here and there, it's like, okay, if one's like a single sequencer and, you know, like it's writing data to the layer one and one's a single sequencer and it's writing data to a layer two and one's a single sequencer and it's writing data to Celestia, like, the single sequencer is far, far more salient here than anything else. So I think the security arguments are, how shall I put it? I would love to have those debates in 5 years when all this stuff is decentralized, but when it's all centralized, like, hey, the L3s can get there faster, very, very possibly.
I like it. I guess like one last question I have on like the syndicate and DGEN relationship too, is like, so obviously, you know, you guys went from, you know, idea to shipping in like a month. how much of that, and I know you guys have like other L3s that you guys are working on, like how much of your work on DeGen Chain is like fulfilled? And obviously I'm sure you guys are still gonna be working with Jacek and stuff, but like, is this, you know, 80% of like the vision or idea that you had? Is it like 50%? Like, how are you guys thinking about that?
Anil, I will not rest until DeGen tipping is able to be used in every single coffee shop in the world. We have a ton of vision around data, around interoperability, around how to make these chains scale up. We're talking with Jacek all the time about these customizations, about these precompiles. We're at the beginning, man. It's so exciting.
Yeah, just to jump in there, and then Jacek, you should, you know, share everything that you're dreaming up. You know, we said on our first call when with Jacek at ETH Denver, like the role, like standing up the chain and getting it operational and running is like the easy part. The hard part is everything that comes after that. And, you know, along the lines of like our mission as a company and what we've always cared about, which is like enabling on-chain communities and empowering them in ways that they weren't able to before. Like we really care about the long-term success and growth of on-chain communities, whether they were a smart contract in our early days, you know, or a chain with an L3 like DeGen. So our work, as Will said, is just starting. I don't know if that's 80%, you know, like there's still 80% left or 90% left or 99% left. Like, I don't know, but it's probably a significant amount of like what we hope to contribute to DeGen Chain is coming after and hasn't even yet been sort of publicly, you know, shared. So we're really excited to be a long-term partner to DeGen and Jacek and, you know, this community and all the communities that we work with.
Yeah, no, definitely the vision is longer term. And now it seems like, because, you know, initially I was thinking of DeGen Chain more as like an experiment, like, hey, let's let it run and see what happens in a way. But now since like the, I don't know, like just the volume and the sheer like interest in it seems to have like really jumped up and spiked. And now I'm kind of seeing like the longer term vision in this whole arena. It makes sense. It makes sense for DeGen Chain to really like, you know, just support it, flourish, and like let it flourish. And I think like not even just touching on the technical aspects, but also just like having our community there and giving visibility to like maybe smaller app builders and things like that. I think that's going to be really powerful. And then just like, yeah, having those low cost like transactions, like that was the ask of the developers that basically initially came. That's the thing they want. In terms of like this, like security and those kind of things, I don't know. Like I used to work at like these big companies and we would get into like all these wars of like, man, we should use this language, we should use that language, we should use this framework or something, and then like we never solved the underlying problem, which was like the, like, you know, what we should be solving. And so it felt like here, like transaction fees, that's a big thing, like basically that enables so much more to be built. So solving that problem and then figuring out security as like a second thing, you know, we'll figure it out at some point, if it even is like as big an issue as people maybe claim. Obviously I'm not like so, you know, deep in the woods in that place, but yeah, definitely DeGen Chain, I think it's going to be exciting, especially once we get like an app store style maybe front page, or I don't know what exactly what's going to look like. And I think right now we're still in this phase where builders are just kind of like building. And so we're not really incentivizing, let's say, like users to come on the chain. So that's the surprising part for me, because there aren't like any incentives for users really to come to DeGen Chain, like flowing from us. Like, hey, you're going to get a boost or you're going to get some kind of DeGen. Whereas on like, let's say Blast, you get a huge incentive because like there's yield built into that. And so people will just, you know, they'll migrate there where the interest rates, so, you know, let's say are higher. So there isn't that. And so I find that super exciting that built, like people want to come there. If we can kind of get like incentivized builders to build. And I think that incentive almost is built in by the fact that the fees are so low. So I think that's like such a huge thing. And then like once that point gets across, I think that'll be great. And then I guess then the next thing will be to kind of help the builders gain some maybe more traction or get some users on there and things like that. So I kind of see this in two phases. Right now is sort of like the builder phase, let people kind of build, and then maybe more of like users trickling in, and then like the whole like user phase where you really want to like push users to like, all right, now things are really happening. But maybe it's all happening simultaneously, probably in reality.
That's really cool. Because like, you know, I've bridged over to DGen Chain. I'm like one of the, 700,000 users, it seems like. And yeah, so far it's exciting. It's cool to use it. You're totally right about the fees. Like you can like buy $5 or something, which is like insane to think about in crypto, right? So far, all I've really seen are like meme coins, like, you know, like DGen Pepe, D Pepe or whatever, like Wake and stuff like that. But I'm excited to see some of these like, you know, like that Las Vegas idea, I think is like a really cool framing that I hadn't thought about before. That I think is like, now you have this place where devs will be incentivized to build these small mini apps that have, you know, almost 1 million users, as well as like, you know, over $60 million to be able to deploy in these like small mini apps that don't need, you know, all these like hundreds of millions of dollars to really like, you know, prove valuable. So that's really interesting. I guess, yeah, maybe like Will, Ian, like anything else that you guys are really excited about, DGen? I wanted to, you know, ask Yasik a question about Farcaster to end it off, but any like other words you want to say about DGen Chain and like anything you're excited about in your term?
I'll just say broadly like that we're really excited to be and grateful and honored. It's a privilege, honestly, to be able to work with communities and projects and founders like Yasik and his community. As mentioned, like our whole approach to this is helping grow communities on chain long term. So we're really excited. I mean, launching the chain was step one or phase one, but you know, the next phase is actually accelerating development on DGen chain. And so that's something we're really excited about. A lot of our first party tools, like our transaction cloud APIs, you know, are now integrated with DGen chain to help more developers build on DGen chain. And we're working on a number of programs with Yasik and others to further support, you know, more developers on DGen chain. So super excited about that and everything that's going to come from it.
Yep. And I'm excited for how this chain will evolve. Like the foundation that we have is so strong. The usage we have is so strong. The developer ecosystem on the chain is so strong. What happens when we start to customize it? What does like a DGen chain envisioned from first principles look like? We're going to follow that interest and see where it leads. That's very exciting.
Yeah. Just adding on to that, I think it's going to be super interesting just to see, because like, you know, there are kind of like standard apps on every chain. So you'll have like an NFT marketplace. And so I think maybe Zora or OpenSea, maybe at some point we grow like really large, like, we want to have our marketplace. But I think it'll be much more interesting to see like who builds the NFT marketplace for DGen. Because I think somebody's going to build it because people want to like basically trade these NFTs. They want to mint NFTs through an easy like UI. So I think that's going to be like really interesting to see these like standard kind of applications that are all like on these like, let's say, I don't know, L2s, like these other kind of chains, but then have like this DGen place. And what does the DGen community pick as their marketplace? What does the DGen community pick as their, I don't know, their Uniswap or,
yeah.
I know there's already like DGen Swap and things like that. So I don't know. It's going to be super interesting to see.
Yeah, I think that's really cool because it goes back to what Will is saying, which is like, you know, you can customize the L3, you know, as much as you want. So that means anything that's built on the L2 or L1, you can basically port over. But however it's built on DGen chain or an L3, probably cannot be ported over to the same degree, right? So like the L2 or L1. So I think this is like a whole other like sandbox for devs to be able to play in. And what's great is you already have so many users in just, you know, less than a week. So it's going to be really, I'm really excited. I guess last question, Yasik, like, you know, obviously Farcaster is very close to your heart. You know, like you said, Ted deemed you an OG. So like, what are some projects that maybe you see coming out of the woodwork that you're, you know, excited about Farcaster? Because I think what's cool is like DGen has evolved from, you know, from Farcaster, right? And it's become its own thing, but obviously still has ties to it. And then are there other projects like Dracula and stuff that you see yourself partnering with, or do you even have to have a partnership? Like, well, can other people just start, you know, integrating DGEN without having to talk to you? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, the tokens, like, just it's a standard ERC-20 token, so anybody can integrate it on Base. You don't really have to come to me. I think most projects come because they want some kind of like grant or maybe like a shout out or something like that, which helps them kind of like bootstrap and kind of get like users flowing. With Dracula, yeah, that was like a really great partnership. Like looking back now, like giving them 20 million DGENs almost seems like a lot in like financial terms. But back then, you know, it was kind of like almost a no-brainer, so to speak, I guess, because Dan was the person who introduced me to Alex. And so I was like, all right, well, if Dan is introducing me, then Dan Romero from Farcaster. So I was like, all right, well, that makes sense. Let's do it. But I wasn't really convinced. I didn't think it was going to have a huge impact. I was like, you know what, I want people to build. And these guys have built something and now they want to integrate it. So it makes sense. And then that ended up ballooning way past like whatever I thought was kind of like possible. And so that was like, so I think saying yes a lot to a lot of projects was actually a good thing to do, rather than kind of saying, no, I'll think about it and waiting for like the next high quality project, quote unquote, to come through the door. Because Dracula is high quality, but like they're very early. So it's kind of like, but anyway, I think those were kind of good decisions. And because Dracula ended up kind of releasing it, then that kind of like showed other people that, okay, we can also build on DGEN. This is kind of like a good tool. This is like a good token. And there's a whole community that will kind of pour in and like check it out. So I think bracket.game is pretty cool. It's basically like sports. It's kind of like Frentech. It has like a bonding curve and you can kind of like buy and sell your favorite sports team. Right now they have the NCAA where you can kind of like purchase different teams. And then I think they're fine tuning things. And then I think NBA playoffs, you know, when that kind of starts, that's going to be pretty cool. I think that's a cool application. Of course, there's Pearl for kind of like basically that's been like the number one. That's been like the day one almost DGEN app. In terms of like there's so many applications that have been coming to me for like basically integration with DGEN that I actually don't have like a list in my head right now. It's been like a little bit overwhelming. Yeah, it's kind of been crazy. But I hope that. Hopefully I'll be less involved in like each, like, let's say individual project, like moving forward, and more of like have maybe more of like an easier way to highlight project. Let's say like the app store where, you know, you can sort by transactions, weekly transactions, or by Farcaster likes, or combination of both, or all these kind of different factors. And then that will kind of give visibility to projects rather than me having to do the visibility through like all these shout outs that I've been doing, which I'm happy to do. But I think like the sheer volume of like the number of apps that want to kind of post, and me being like the only quality kind of like person, like kind of gauging, like, is this noteworthy? Is this not noteworthy? Is also not the best kind of thing. It's good to some degree, but it would be better to have like a more community ruling on like what is the best app. And so I think transactions probably is a good metric. Volume is probably a good metric. Farcaster likes is a good metric, and then kind of just display that to people.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, guys. No, this was a great conversation. I could talk to you guys for hours about this stuff. Will, Ian, always great to have you guys back. Yasek, it was great meeting you. I recommend the whole audience follow all you guys on, you know, Warpcast, Farcaster, and Twitter if you still use that, Boomer Technology. But yeah, guys, great to have you. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks so much. And anyone wants to jam on the stuff, we're just obsessed with L3s and their implications. So feel free to DM at Will on Warpcast or at Will Papper on Twitter and Telegram. Yeah, always happy to jam.
Yeah, happy to be here as well.
Thanks so much, Neil.
Take care.
Well, see you guys.
Thanks so much.